here's a story from The World.
Meanwhile, the war slogs on. Russian military forces are making slow and methodical gains across the eastern part of Ukraine. Ukraine, though, is pushing back using weapons provided by the U.S. and European partners. Yesterday, military leaders and diplomats from 40 nations, including the U.S., gathered in Germany, many committed to supporting Ukraine with even more weapons. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin assured his audience of that.
My Ukrainian friends, we know the burden that you all carry. And we know, and you should know, that all of us have your back.
Getting the weapons to Ukraine quickly, that is a huge piece of the puzzle. Vincent Castillo is a professor of logistics at The Ohio State University. He also served 8 years as an infantry officer in the Army National Guard. Vincent Castillo, what types of weapons are the U.S. and European countries providing for Ukraine?
U.S. is providing everything from small arms and body armor to drones, Javelin anti-tank weapons, as well as shoulder-fired surface-to-air missiles, and even howitzers, field artillery weapons, and the ammunition to be able to support the use of all of that equipment in Ukraine.
So, Vincent, you're a logistics expert. Let's get to logistics. Can you describe the process of transferring, like physically moving some of these large weapons into Ukraine?
Sure. And this is a complicated orchestra. So if there is equipment being sourced from stockpiles at U.S. bases in Europe, it's going to be transferred by train, truck, or air to locations along the western border of Ukraine. And this could be in Poland, this could be in Hungary, this could be in Romania. This is where the Ukrainians will then take ownership over that equipment. The Ukrainians will pick up the items, the equipment, and transport it across their country to the next locations where they're needed. Now, the next tiers in this supply chain are going to be dependent on the situation on the ground, and it depends on what the equipment is. So if we're talking about, for instance, javelins, which are anti-tank weapons, then based on a combination of military intelligence about where Russian tanks are most likely to be attacked, what the current supplies of javelins are, and where those are most needed, that's where the decision will be made about where to send that resupply of javelin anti-tank weapons.
How do the U.S. and other countries actually prevent Russia from knowing when and where weapons will be delivered? And some of this materiel is large. It's like hiding an elephant, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it starts with the general risk assessment of how likely are the shipments coming from the Western countries into Ukraine? How likely are they going to be attacked? Well, we've seen that Russia has regrouped in the East, and they're really only attacking in the West with missile attacks. So what this means is that the Ukrainian convoys that are transporting the goods from NATO countries to their next location within Ukraine, it means what they have to do is try to do their best to prevent conveying any patterns of movement. This means traveling at night, leaving at different times, having convoys that are of different sizes, and doing their best to arm those convoys with gun trucks and even potentially anti-tank capabilities so they can defend themselves from direct attacks. But it also includes pre-positioning small aerial defense teams with shoulder-fired air defense systems that can help provide some cover from possible aerial attacks. And so what this means is that operational security at this point is at its utmost importance. The Ukrainians will have to do their best to try to mask their movements to try to prevent the Russians from predicting where they're going to be traveling.
Right. Once the weapons are transferred into the hands of Ukraine's military, how do they get transferred to the front lines, that last mile, if you will?
The last mile is going to be one of the most precarious. There will be logistics units that are also going to be responsible for conducting convoys. And this is an exchange that occurs between the units that are on the front lines and these logistics units who have to negotiate on the ground where exactly they're going to meet and how the exchanges are going to take place. Because the last mile is closest to the Russian offensives, it's the most precarious, and it's one where they're most likely going to receive the most amount of combat. So it's a particularly dangerous movement in the entire supply chain.
So now that these weapons transfers have begun and the conveyor belts are kind of in sync with the needs in Ukraine, does this get any easier or more predictable for the country supplying or for Ukraine receiving the deliveries?
I don't think this is going to get easier. I think that as the supply chains become more capable, the Russians will eventually employ a strategy of interdiction. supply chain interdiction, which means attacking the lines of communication. That's the military term for supply chain, to try to prevent resupply and the flow of military materiel that's needed. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there. As they get better, they're going to present themselves a more important target. And so it gets a little bit more dangerous as time goes on.
Vincent Castillo is a professor of logistics at The Ohio State University, speaking with us about the U.S. and Europe's efforts of transferring weapons to Ukraine. Thank you very much for this. It's fascinating.
Thank you for having me.